Hello and welcome to Animates, bringing you stories about animals and how we connect with them. This program is recorded in the studios of 2RPH Sydney for the RPH Network. I'm Katie Brooks. Today we will meet Anna Gigliotti-Scrett, who will tell us about her business working with both service dogs and pets. Hi Anna, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I just started this business last year and I'm an orientation and mobility specialist, and I'm also a guide dog instructor, and I also work with people with their pet dogs. So it's a kind of three-pronged approach to who I am and what I do.
Normally you think of, you have some kind of service dog, they're trained by an organisation like guide dogs.
Yeah.
So what inspired you to be an independent consultant on such matters?
It wasn't something that I thought was on the cards at the time. I was living in Melbourne and my partner was living in Adelaide, as he had to move away from Melbourne for work. So I was looking to move across to Adelaide, and it just sort of came to be that the more I thought about the options that were available, there wasn't really a lot of work opportunities that were jumping out at me. I thought maybe it's time to start working for myself. So I really just drew on the skills and the experience and expertise that I had in orientation and mobility and in guide dog instruction, and then taking the really keen interest that I had in dog training and moving that into the pet dog industry as well. So I guess all the different components of what I'm working with, the different clients that I'm working with, really helps me in the other spaces. The stuff that I'm really interested in dog training is a lot of the positive reinforcement and force-free training. So there's a lot of new research that's been coming out and a lot of different techniques to what I first learnt. So when I started 11 years ago, we were really doing things to our dogs rather than doing things with them. So if it was vet care or if it was training, you know, it's something that you do to your dog. And now it's a lot more of a conversation between you and your dog and really getting the best out of it. So there's some really awesome stuff that's going on that's called cooperative care behaviours. So it's where animals can learn to participate in their vet care. And so rather than having to hold a dog down in order to take blood, for instance, there's dogs that learn to stand really still and allow you to take blood. I mean, it takes a lot of training.
Yes, I know that's the sort of thing that I'm familiar with when I was a little kid going to hospital. You know, they could kind of explain to you why they're doing things, but it's kind of harder to do that with an animal.
Yes, absolutely. And there's something called start button behaviours, which is really cool, where the dog learns that, for instance, if you train the dog to rest their chin into your hand or rest their chin onto a towel, that's the dog's way of saying, yes, I'm ready for this procedure to happen now. And at the moment they move their chin away, it's the dog saying, oh no, I'm not quite ready for that now, you know, that's a bit uncomfortable. And so you can have this real conversation with the dog of them allowing a procedure to happen.
So I guess that gives them some kind of element of control then too, doesn't it? It's not just, oh,
absolutely,
all these terrible things are happening to me.
Exactly. Yep, definitely. So really exciting stuff that we can now recognise how to give control to our animals, because we do control so much in their life that it's really exciting when you can give a little bit of that back.
What sort of clients do you have, both dogs and their people? What is your typical client like?
I wouldn't say that there is one typical client. It's a really interesting, diverse group of people. So I have some people that I work with either support with their guide dog or support with their pet dog. They're working with someone who has hearing loss and has a hearing dog, also working with someone who has a pup that they're training to be their own assistance dog, so that's somebody who owns their dog. I have clients that are a family who've got their new puppy and they've got kids, so that's a pretty new experience for me, a lot more puppies and managing those kind of households.
As an independent trainer of guide dogs and things, do you have any problems dealing with the larger, more established organisations that provide the dogs?
I haven't really experienced any problems at all with the major organisations. I have had some things to do with some of them, so been available for some contract work from time to time, so that's been really good. I guess I don't see myself as a huge threat to the major organisations in terms of business because I'm one person. I am really just supporting people here and there. But maybe time will tell. We'll see how that space goes. It's a pretty exciting time now that there's been more opportunities for people who are either orientation and mobility specialists or guide dog instructors who are able to now work more independently. So there's a lot more independent providers popping up, and which I think is fantastic. It gives a lot more choice to the clients who are engaging with them.
How much of your work is in person versus at a distance and what that involves?
It's a really changing climate. So telephone support and telephone consultations, whether it be via a phone call or a Zoom consult or a FaceTime, that was something that I was providing already.
So and a bit ahead of the game there then.
Yeah, a little bit ahead of the game. So certainly when COVID-19 happened, it was really about, I suppose, convincing the people who are used to having face-to-face consults that it's still a really effective means.
How does that work? You're not right there and you can't directly interact with the dog.
I'm very lucky in the fact that I've been working in a blindness environment. You need to be really capable verbally. So you need to be able to explain what you're doing rather than just showing them. So in that sense, moving over to a phone or a virtual online platform is still very useful. So I can communicate what the person needs to know. And whether it's a pet dog, whether it's a guide dog, it's really about upskilling the person as to what they need to do with their dog. So I don't necessarily need to have my hands on the dog in order to be able to teach somebody what the best next steps are for them to be able to work with their dog.
So do you turn the video on so you can see the dog, or do you just go with audio, or what? How does that work?
Yeah, so it's really about what somebody is comfortable with as well. It's very helpful if I can see some of what the dog's behaviour is, because what somebody describes may not give the whole image. So I suppose when you say a picture speaks 1,000 words.
If you're working with a client with a vision impairment, they might not be picking up on something you could see from the dog.
That's right, exactly. So it's a bit of coaching. It's a bit of encouraging somebody how to use the platform. You know, they may not have used FaceTime before or Zoom before. So giving a bit of tech support along those lines. Maybe being able to say to them, oh, that camera angle isn't quite catching the dog, particularly if the person doesn't have good vision. So if they're unable to see when they first set up the camera, it might be showing just the tail end of the dog, or I can't see the dog's face. So really helping them to be able to see it and to see what's going on, and working together like that.
And you said you work with clients all over the place, so not just in Adelaide where you are?
That's right. So interstate or regional clients as well in South Australia.
If we weren't all restricted in our movements, then you would sometimes go out to meet them as well, would you?
Yeah, so depending on where people are and how accessible it is for me to get to them, certainly I do a lot more face-to-face visits around Adelaide.
What differences are there between working with service dogs and then just pet dogs?
There's a lot more range of different behaviours that you're seeing when someone has a pet dog. You know, I might be working with somebody with a puppy and with lots of different breeds, or with different behavioural issues that you might see in a pet dog that you may not see much of in a guide dog space.
Because they're selected to not have some of those traits?
Yeah. For instance, if there was any aggression or if there was any extreme anxiety in a guide dog that you might have in training, they might not come through. They might be recognised when they're a puppy and addressed and supported earlier before they would get to me.
You mentioned anxiety and aggression and that sort of thing. Are there any other differences you can think of?
So something that you could do with a pet dog is you can scatter food on the ground, and you can do different enrichment activities that involve either throwing a treat to the dog, getting a dog to run after and chase a treat on the ground, or sprinkling food on the ground. And that's something that is absolutely discouraged in a working dog. Different activities or different games, we can still do really great enrichment activities with a guide dog, but need to be really mindful of what kind of impact that might have in the future. So, for example, you can do some foraging type of game where you sprinkle a little bit of kibble in a box for a dog and the dog can search through and snuffle with their nose and looking through that. So if a dog is a guide dog, at least you can have that really clear context cue that this is the specific box that you're allowed to sniff in and forage in, whereas at home for a pet dog, you might be able to sprinkle that food through the grass and it's not a worry to you as the pet dog owner if your dog is searching for food in the grass.
Yeah.
But for a guide dog, you wouldn't want a dog to be searching for food when you're out and about.
We've already discussed the technical side of how your business has changed through COVID-19. Are you finding that dogs have any different or unusual problems at this time to what they normally have? Because, you know, they might not be getting out and about.
I guess I'm finding that it's more of a worry for handlers or for owners. How might their dogs be after the COVID-19 or whether it's going to have an impact? But I'm not really seeing a big, clear impact on the dogs right now. I know there's some really good proactive handlers who are taking their dogs out to different environments and trying to have more challenges in their work in order to create that. So when there were lots of people that were at home, there wasn't really any meaningful work for the dogs, so they needed to kind of create that work. Or checking their dog in to daycare if the doggy daycare was available. I guess I haven't been experiencing any problems with dogs, but I've been asked about information for how people can be proactive so that they don't have those problems in the future. So I'm getting a really good feel from people that people are concerned about that and they're wanting the best out of their dog in this situation.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners that I've forgotten about that you think might be interesting or important?
So one more thing that I was doing in COVID-19, which was brand new, was I teamed up with a colleague who does dog training. She's not in the guide dog industry, but she does pet dog training in Dubbo, New South Wales. And I've been supporting her with a puppy class that she's been doing online. So the format was a Facebook group where people can contribute different videos. They get different lessons every week and then they send their videos in and we have a look and help review and help answer any questions. So that's been really interesting and a different thing to be involved in.
If people are interested in getting some services from your organisation, how can they contact you?
So I have a Facebook page, which is Forward Thinking Dog Training and Mobility, and also a website, which is www.forwardthinkingdogtraining.com.au. And people could give me a call or email or send a message through Facebook and just find out a little bit more about me and if they wanted to engage in services together.
Well, I appreciate your time and thanks a lot for talking to me.
Thank you.
That was Anna Gigliotti-Scrett from Forward Thinking Dog Training and Mobility. Her website again is www.forwardthinkingdogtraining.com.au. Just repeating that address again, it's www.forwardthinkingdogtraining.com.au. And now, Annette Rosen will read from Anna's blog some advice for guide dog handlers during COVID-19.
Part one is titled Guiding Skills Outdoors. These are unprecedented times. While we can gain some reassurance that we are all in this together, that doesn't fix the holes in our recent new lifestyle. I understand that many handlers are worried about their dog guides. Worries about how to maintain your dog's guiding skills, how to exercise your dog, and how to keep your dog relaxed during times that we might be feeling stressed. This is part one of a three-part blog post with tips and ideas for what you can do with your dog during the coronavirus pandemic and beyond. Part two will discuss practicing guiding skills and obedience indoors as well as enrichment. And part three will cover hygiene, health, and training for vet procedures and handling. Firstly, take a moment to reflect on what may have changed in your life. Are you at home a lot more now? You may have previously gotten to work or appointments via public transport, taxi, walking, all of which has been taken out of your routine. Many dogs can adapt well to changes. However, the change might unsettle your dog initially. If you can try to keep up some semblance of routine in your day, this may help you and your dog cope a little better. Changes to what we are allowed to do outside happen frequently now, often with short notice. Currently, we are allowed to leave our homes for exercise, and I encourage you to do this with your dogs. The streets are likely to be less populated. Consider what time of day suits you, such as how many people are out. Are the people great for obstacle work? Or are they distractions? Do you feel safer when there are more people or less? Can you walk while keeping a safe distance from people? The time of day and the location of your walks might change accordingly. If you're walking less with your dog, you might need to reinforce the behaviours you like so that they aren't deteriorating. Some dogs need more frequent work than others to maintain their work standards. For example, a younger dog or one that you've had for a short time may need more practice and reinforcement, while a dog that's been in your life for many years may have very strong skills that are resistant to breaking down. Sometimes we take for granted all the guiding work that our dogs do, allowing us to relax a little and switch off from all aspects of the walking journey. You may need to return to basics and reward your dog more often. Food, pats, praise. This might be done when you stop at the curb or when you find something en route, such as a chair or your destination. Timing is important for reinforcement. If you want it to strengthen behaviour, it needs to occur immediately after the behaviour you like. If you waited until the end of the walk to reward, it likely won't translate into elements of the walk you might be thinking of. To the dog, the moment at the end of the walk might be reinforced rather than specific behaviours along the walk. When using lots of food rewards in training, make sure you take it out of your dog's daily meals to prevent weight gain. With less shops open, you might have less people and less temporary street furniture on the path. If you're looking for obstacles, bin day could be a good time to practice right shoulder work. Head out early before all the work from homers get their bins in. You can visit the train station platform to experience the train passing or jump on and off a bus just for practice, if that is appropriate. Again, bear in mind you may need to be able to justify where you are going and why. If in doubt, check with the relevant authorities in your local community. Weigh up the risks. If you can do these activities without touching doors and handrails, this is ideal. However, if you need a handrail for safety from falling, please use it and sanitize your hands immediately before and afterwards. Perhaps you might like to set yourself a challenge and learn a new route. You could study the GPS maps prior to going out or drop a pin on your GPS to somewhere locally that you will find your way to on a walk. Ensure you're doing this safely and that you have some local knowledge, especially around road crossing safety. Some of you would be more adventurous travellers than others. Some are rote learners, so bear in mind that this option is not for everyone. If you think your safety might be at risk, please do not try this without extra support. Safety first. And that's the end of the first part of the blog, COVID-19. For dog guide handlers. Part 2, guiding skills and obedience indoors. Within the home, you can practice asking your dog to find the door or find a chair. If you live with others, you can set it up so they are sitting in a chair and your dog needs to find an empty one. Reward your dog with food, games, praise, or patting when they get it right. If your dog gets it wrong, consider how to make it easier so your dog can practice getting it right. Perhaps you can hang some bells on a ribbon from your door handle. That way, when you ask your dog to find the door, the dog can nudge the bells and you can hear them jingle at the moment they get it right. If using bells, first teach your dog to jingle the bells, rewarding for doing it right, then practice at a short distance, then putting them on the door. You can practice obedience cues that your dog already knows, things such as sit, down, stay, and return to heel. Try to incorporate it into different times of the day, in different areas of the house, and with different distractions. Reward your dog when she gets it right. Does your dog tuck himself nicely under the table or chairs? If there is room for improvement, you can practice that at home. Have fun with training new behaviours. You can teach your dog some new tricks, such as putting their toys away or bringing you their favourite toy. Are you able to teach your dog to identify her toys by name, such as ducky, rope, teddy? How about teaching your dog a hand target? This means the dog touches your hand with his nose or muzzle. Choose a clear and obvious way to present your hand to your dog so it looks different to how you usually have your hand. You might choose your fist, a flat palm, the back of your hand, or two fingers. Present your hand close to your dog, near her face. Your dog is likely to move towards it to take a look. The moment you feel contact, this could even be the light brush of whiskers, say a bridge word. I like to say yes. Reward your dog when she touches it. A bridge word is a promise that food is coming 1 second later. Have your treats in a handy place like an open treat pouch or cup so you can get to the treats quickly. The best treats are pea-sized, soft and tasty. This means your dog won't get too full when training and won't spend long to swallow them. I find small kibble the easiest to use, though it's not soft. A more advanced behaviour would be to teach your dog to retrieve objects. This might be your small gardening trowel you lose in the grass, a set of keys, maybe attach a small soft toy keyring so it's easier for your dog to pick up. Your white cane. If you don't know exactly how to teach her retrieve, start by practicing on something you don't need the dog to pick up. For example, with the inner cardboard from a roll of hand towels. That way, if or when you make mistakes, and if the dog is confused, he's only confused with the cardboard roll and you haven't broken the future behaviour of collecting your keys. When you're home more, it can be a perfect time to work on any attachment or separation anxiety behaviours your dog might have. Practice settling your dog away from you. This could be in the same room but on the other side. Can you be in a different room to your dog? Can you leave the dog while you go to the mailbox or take the bins out? If you have a legitimate case of separation anxiety, this can be difficult to manage alone, and I urge you to consult with a veterinarian that specialises in behaviour, as well as working with a force-free behaviour trainer. If there's not one in your local area, many can do remote consults. Enrichment. You may have heard the word enrichment in relation to our animals. Enrichment is a word to describe ways to make our dogs' lives more interesting, often within the home. Many of you will have Kongs and know how much your dog loves a Kong when it is stuffed with food. I like to freeze the Kong so it is solid and longer lasting for the dog. Ensure the dog knows how to use the food puzzle or Kong. You don't want to make it frustrating. Just like training, you want to start off easier and increase the difficulty gradually. Many long-lasting treats and chews, like a bully stick, beef tendon, deer antler or goat horn, are also a favourite for dogs. There's a Facebook page run by Shay Kelly called Canine Enrichment that has lots of wonderful enrichment ideas from homemade items such as toilet rolls or bunched up newspaper in a box with treats scattered at the bottom so the dog has to search through for it. There are also a lot of food puzzles you can buy online or in shops. Always supervise any new toys and remove the toy afterwards if your dog is at risk of damaging or destroying it. Labradors are expert destroyers, hence the Kong is often a great option for those power chewers. If you feed your dog from a bowl, see if you can change that. Use your dog's daily meal rations for food puzzles or enrichment activities so he or she doesn't gain weight. Did you know that when dogs have opportunities to sniff, it can lower their pulse rates? Sniffing is encouraged in pet dogs a lot more in recent years than in the past, due to more studies showing the benefits for our dogs. What does this mean for our dog guides when we actively discourage their sniffing? You might worry that encouraging your dog to sniff might increase his sniffing behaviour, so before making any changes, why not record some baseline information about your dog, such as how often he sniffs? You can then introduce some opportunities to sniff. This could be in your garden or within your home, making it distinct from when your dog is working in harness. It might be that when you give your dog these opportunities, does he sniff less on his walks because his sniffing needs are being met? A snuffle mat is a popular choice for many. It can be purchased or handmade by using a rubber doormat that has holes in it and tying many strips of fabric to it. I believe it can be quite effortful, but good for those who are into crafts. The snuffle mat has many folds of fabric that you can hide your dog's food through it, encouraging your dog to search through and sniff to find all the treats. Some people are making a snuffle ball version too. While some people go to agility, fly ball and obedience classes with their dogs, a popular new activity is called nose work. This is where you teach the dog a certain scent by rewarding him when he responds to it and then hide the scent for your dog to find it and receive a reward. There are some great nose work classes out there if you're interested. You can explore if they can provide instruction remotely. And that brings us to the end of part two of the blog. And now we're going to hear part three, hygiene, health and training for vet procedures and handling. There's currently no evidence that our domestic dogs can contract COVID-19. Ensure you practice good hand hygiene and avoid allowing people to pat your dog, as the virus can be carried on their coat in the same way it is carried on other surfaces. If someone does pat your dog, don't become too worried. The chances that the person is unwell with coronavirus is very low. The virus is transmitted through droplets from an infected person. If the person is unwell, they would have to have active virus particles on their body. If a droplet containing the virus landed on your dog, you would have to touch that and then touch your nose, eyes or mouth for it to enter your system, and then your system would have to take up the infection. Hand sanitizer, if you can get hold of any, can sometimes make our dogs sneeze. Avoid putting your hands too close to your dog's face when you first put it on. The strong smell fades quickly, and this will reduce any temporary discomfort for your dog. Pay attention to any sudden changes in your dog's behaviour. Any time you notice sudden changes, consider if it might be a medical issue. If your dog has lost his or her appetite or is lethargic, for instance, that would likely warrant a call to your vet. If your dog is chewing on the furniture or digging the yard, that might be a sign of boredom. If you do have a vet issue, call your vet to find out what their process is now. This too might change without notice. They may prefer a phone or video consult, or they might ask you to wait outside the clinic until you are called. Some vet clinics are asking to see the dog without the person coming into the clinic. Understand that new procedures are also a work in progress, that staff may be stressed and under additional pressures. If it is important to you to be with your dog for the consultation or treatment, be patient with the vet staff and ask kindly how this might be negotiated. It might be useful to take any videos or photos of your dog ahead of time so you can show these to the vet. For example, videos could be good to show lameness in your dog. A photo can be taken of a rash or wound on your dog's skin. You could also enlist the help of someone to film or take a photo. Recently, I had a dog that was barking in concern at a statue. As I have an iPhone, I asked a man nearby if he had an iPhone. He did, and he was happy to take some footage of my dog so that I could have both hands free and work with my dog and capture all of that on film. We were then able to use the AirDrop feature for a way to transfer the video from his phone to mine without trading phone numbers and without making physical contact. When I was first taught about medicating a dog or holding them for a vet visit, was mostly focused on how to restrain the dog so we can do things to our dog. Nowadays, there's a lot of people getting huge success out of cooperative vet care. This means we teach our dogs to be a willing participant in their vet care. There's some great videos out there of dogs and other animals doing things such as standing patiently while they're getting an injection, taking blood, or opening their mouth to have their teeth cleaned. It is possible to train a dog to rest their chin on a towel for several minutes. This way, the dog can learn to be handled and inspected. If the dog lifts her head off the towel, it is her way of saying she isn't comfortable and you can stop. Have a think about your own dog and is there anything they're not happy with? You might be able to improve it. Maybe your dog hates his feet being touched or his nails clipped. Maybe your girl had some ear infections and she won't let you near her ears. You can systematically work to improve their acceptance of these things. Firstly, you must stop doing the thing that they don't like. If this is a current medical need, such as taking tablets, medicating ears or other requirements, please don't stop providing your dog with necessary care. Chat to your vet or a good quality dog trainer to see how you can work around this. Let's look at nail trimming. Make sure you have some delicious treats. This will help your dog change his feelings from being uncomfortable to thinking, yay, this predicts yummy treats. If your dog doesn't like touching his paw, where on the leg will he let you touch? You might have to touch all the way up to the shoulder, or he might be okay with you touching halfway down. Touch the shoulder, then a second later give him a treat. You want the touch to predict a treat. Do this 5 times. Touch, then treat, touch, then treat, etc. If he is comfortable with 4 to 5 repetitions, then move down the leg a little. Do this with 5 treats, then again move down a little. You can vary things such as the hand pressure, the duration of the touch, or if there are distractions around. If your dog flinches or moves away, that's valuable communication. Thank your dog for letting you know he's not comfortable and make it easier the next time. Don't overtrain this. Just do up to 2 minutes at a time with a few hours between sessions. If you skip a day or a few days, no problem at all. That could be valuable rest time for his brain to absorb what has just happened. If you notice your dog is getting worse or avoiding your touch, rather than more tolerant or enthusiastic, take a break and seek further advice. For more specific support about your individual dog's needs, you are welcome to book a phone consultation where we can develop an individualized training plan. Does your dog have experience being in a crate? I suspect most dog guides do. You can do some crate training if you have access to one at home. It is really important that they can feel comfortable and safe in a crate, as if they need to have a vet stay, this is where they will likely spend some time. And that ends part 3 and the end of the blog COVID-19 for Dog Guide Handlers. And I've been reading from the blog on forwardthinkingdogtraining.com.au.
You have been listening to Animates. If you missed part of the program or would like to share it with a friend, it is available to listen again on our website, www.2rph.org.au/listen/animates. That address again is www.2rph.org.au/listen/animates. This program is recorded in the studios of 2RPH Sydney for the RPH Network. Readings were by Annette Rosen, research by Joseph Schwanzer, and I'm Katie Brooks. Please join us again next time for more stories of animals and their mates.